Hello, everybody. Mark Carlson here, SNEA Technical Council Chair. Welcome to the STC Podcast. Every week, the STC Podcast presents important technical topics to the developer community. Each episode is hand-selected by the SNEA Technical Council from the presentations at our annual Storage Developer Conference. The link to the slides is available in the show notes at snea.org/podcast. You are listening to STC Podcast, Episode 39. Today we hear from Stephen French, Principal Systems Engineer Protocols, Samba Team Primary Data, as he presents SMB 3.1.1 and beyond in the Linux kernel, providing optimal file access to Windows, Mac, Samba, and other file servers from the 2016 Storage Developer Conference.
Okay, I'm Steve French. I've given talks at SNEA before, so many of you know me, and obviously we have a lot of people on Samba team and Microsoft here. I'll be talking about the current status of the Linux client and also some of the things we're working on. This week we have a plug fest going on downstairs, and next week at Microsoft we'll be continuing to work on these. So it tends to be super intense time for all of the Samba developers and all of the kernel developers because we're rapidly trying to remember the things we were last working on 3 months ago at the last one of the plugfests, or 2 months ago at the last. So it's a very interesting time. But what I want to do is get you guys up to date a little bit on where we are with the kernel client. Obviously, the kernel client is largely independent of Samba, but it does have pieces in common in user space, and it has many of the same challenges. Volker's done some great work with SMB client, especially with its performance, and there's been some recent work on, actually very exciting work on the Samba server we can talk about. Okay, I work for Primary Data, and at Primary Data we have some very interesting NFS work going on with flex files, parallelizing I.O., the follow-on to the file layout. But I'm not going to be talking about that. I'll be talking more about SMB stuff today. We had a talk this morning about some of the stuff our company's doing. Okay. I'm going to be talking about some of the file system activity generally, then the status of some key features, a little bit of discussion about performance and bugs, and then Jeremy's going to be giving a talk later about POSIX extensions for SMB3. Jeremy and I and others had done extensions for POSIX for SIFS in the past, but we're long overdue, probably 3 years overdue, for getting this into SMB3, partly because SMB3 does 80% of what we wanted, and partly because we've been busy doing other SMB3 features. Okay, so I work on the Linux kernel. Linux kernel is an amazing project. I think all of you are aware of just how many people, I mean, from Christoph Helbig outside to some really amazing developers working on the Linux kernel. The scale of it is staggering. But to give you some ideas of it, 12 months ago we had this crazy Linux version 4.2. Like clockwork, every 10 or 11 weeks we have our new release. I'm not real fan of the name here, but that's what they call it. Each release has its own name. So we are almost at 4.8. Now, we had a file system summit. Some of you guys were there. File system summit has some impressive developers. These are not all the people working on Linux file systems, of course, but it's a good chunk of them. But it gives you an idea of the kind of people we have to deal with. So in the Samba world, we have one set of people. We see it at SambaXP. In the file system world, Linux people, you have another set. You have other sets you deal with at the Storage Developer Conference. There is some overlap. But a lot of the work, the amazing work you see at Linux is done by this group. Now, what are the things that I hear about in the background that are driving some of this activity? I think this conference is the best time to actually get a feel for that. But some of the things you're seeing are, the better support for NVMe. I think Christoph gave actually, we had a couple talks about this today, I think. Also, the new cheaper adapters, RDMA, these low latency adapters, and much higher network bandwidth are enabling us to do with NAS things that wouldn't be possible before. At the File System Summit, we had a lot of discussions about how we're going to get rich ACLs. There's some violent disagreement about rich ACLs in the kernel. SMB has always supported a richer ACL model. NFS 4.1 and NFS 4.0, copying in some extent SMB, had a similar ACL model, but there's strong resistance against the idea of having deny ACEs. So our more primitive POSIX ACLs in the Linux kernel, we keep trying year after year to push this. It looks so close, so close. We also had violent agreement on XStat. Everybody seems to be behind this idea of XStat, as long as there's no bike shedding, as they put it, as long as we don't keep adding. But the reason this matters to us is that this would, for the first time, allow all Linux to not only get, but you know, set birth time. It would allow us to get at key information that today there's no POSIX API for. You know, Volker, Jeremy, all the Samba team guys daily have to be setting stuff into attributes and dealing with non-atomic calls to query and set information that really should be part of the metadata that comes back. Copy offload, this is fascinating. To be able to get that Blu-ray disk copied in half a second without the client doing any work. We have extensions in Windows 2016 that I'll talk about later, but there's been a lot of push here. I think you've seen in NFS, you've seen in XFS, implementations of copy offload. We had it in BTRFS. David did some great work on enabling the APIs for this. This is so important to cut the network bandwidth as you move files within a server driven by client activity. And of course, virtualization, Hyper-V, as well as Linux virtualization and VMware have driven a lot of the activity, not just in NFS, but also in other protocols. Being able to improve our support for sparse files and fallocate. And of course, a lot of workload shifting. What was the last talk on? You know, Swift. A lot of cloud workloads. We have new ways of new access patterns. These general things are driving a lot of the work we have to do. Now, what happens in Linux? Okay, Linux file system activity is huge. Many of you guys, you know, 4,000 change sets in the Linux file system area, that's huge. These are also very heavily checked, very heavily reviewed, especially in some of the core areas like ext4 and XFS, for example. And now, the Linux kernel activity is down, though. The file system activity is down about 10%, and probably because of the gradual maturing of file systems. Still, this is a hugely active area of development. Over 5% of the kernel changes, obviously most kernel changes are driven by drivers. New hardware devices, weird embedded devices drive kernel activity, but over 5% of it's still file system stuff. The kernel is now more than 15 million lines of source code, of which, you know, almost a million is file system code. And you know, the SIFS code represents about 42,000 lines of that, not counting the user space stuff and the Samba pieces we pull in. What's the most active thing? I think many of you guys would not think that BTRFS is the most active part of the kernel today. You know, people don't think about BTRFS sometimes like that. They think of ext4, perhaps. Notice ext4 activity continues to decrease, actually. XFS is very active. BTRFS is very active. The NFS client activity increased somewhat. The NFS server activity decreased, partly because a year ago there was a lot of scalability work on the NFS server. Now, Samba, though, is 1,800 change sets in the same time period, much more active. Well, obviously, because Samba has a lot more components than just you know, file system related stuff. But it's interesting that Samba is, you know, as big as the top four of those combined in activity. Okay, by release. In 4.2, the SMB 3.1.1 support. Can we do the full 3.1.1 support? No. Can you authenticate as a guest? Sure. Can we? Do we support the more primitive form of the SMB 3.1.1 secure negotiate context? Yes. We added support for duplicate extents, the reflink copy offload that was added in Windows 2016 on REFS. That's there in 4.2. In 4.3, we added the KRB5 support for SMB3. We had it in SIFS, but not in SMB3. Obviously very important for more secure authentication. A lot of people were curious in their apps about how to query information about whether the mount underneath them is actually, does it support, you know, is it on an SSD, different hardware characteristics. And, you know, we had procfs kind of pseudo files to get this, but it was easier to get it from an octal. So I added an octal to allow you to query detailed information on the share properties, the device properties, and the volume properties underneath you. 4.4, we realized a lot of times you're on a server, and you want to copy a file from your client from share 1 to share 2 on the same server. Well, allow copy offload across shares. We also added a sort of primitive form of resilient and persistent handling support. You could mount with the option. We'd request the durable V2 context. We'd request the persistent handle if you mounted with persistent handle, or if your share said continuous availability, but we didn't do all of the guarantees properly. So, I mean, it works, but it's not perfect. And talking with David and others, we're very close to getting Reconnect to be much more closer to what you expect. And we'll talk about that later. So 4.5, you know, there's a lot of tunable stuff. O-direct with cache equals loose. So if you want to write directly to your file, but with loose caching semantics, you can now do it. People in Linux are often running different network topologies where their network may be very slow or very fast. The echo interval, we're pinging the server to see if it's awake to decide if we need to reconnect to it, was made tunable. And we began this encryption support. Now, encryption support is not finished, but share encryption is probably the biggest feature that we get asked about right now. Encryption support is so helpful when you're trying to mount to an Azure share or when you're trying to mount to something at Microsoft. You know, when you're going across the internet, this per-share encryption is very important. But I think it's useful for lots of use cases, not just that. 4.7 was dominated by bad lock fixes. It was a big set of fixes. Thank you, Samba team guys. There were some side effects on our guest mount options, even in the kernel for this, and some NetApp-related fixes. Red Hat and SUSE did some interesting fixes for 4.8. Some of the Red Hat contributed stuff was this prefix path stuff, and we also had an interesting problem that, you know, it's fascinating, you can still have bugs like this that happen even years and years afterwards. We had a problem with Makedir, and, you know, fell through a hole in a test, we didn't notice it. And there's some stuff that's in progress that's really kind of neat. Okay, right now we're reviewing fixes for prefix path. So for example, if you get the slashes, depending on how you, when you're mounting to a share, you might not have access to the root directory in the share. So you might be mounting one or two levels lower than that, but we have to traverse the whole thing. Well, we have to get the slashes right, depending on whether your server supports POSIX or not. Well, that fix is almost, we're working on that as we, you know, an hour ago. We added some fixes recently for improved POSIX compatibility. Just crazy things like trailing spaces, trailing periods, that sort of thing. That just went in fairly recently. One of the things that we added last night, was, you know, we've had this creation time for a long time. Xstat's not in. How do we return creation time? How do we return the file attributes? Today, the only file attributes you can get back, other than, you know, the boring ones, are, it's a file or a directory, is it's compressed. So I think David added the compressed file support a while ago. You can get that flag, but none of the other flags, like it's indexed, it's sparse. There's no way to get those back. So we added an XAdder for that, so you can have simple user space tools to display that. These aren't POSIX things. Obviously, POSIX doesn't know anything about anything except the ext2i octals allow you to get compressed and encrypted, and that's pretty much it. The rest of them, things like it's indexed, you know, things like this, you have to, or archive, system, hidden, those DOS attributes, we have to get by with a pseudo xAdder. And the name is up for negotiation if you guys don't like sifs.dos attributes. NTFS tends to put these up in user space, so it's hard to look at the code because the user space tools are all a little more hidden. But NTFS has kind of similar kind of approach to returning some of the NTFS metadata. But the general problem we're trying to solve here is if your server stores it, we probably want to back it up. If your server stores it, we probably want to see it sometimes from tools. So this SMB3 metadata that you can't get out from POSIX matters, and we have to have some way of displaying it. We also need to improve reconnect support. Networks are terrible. They go down. How many times did your network go down today? And being able to provide, you know, best effort reconnection is nice, but there are guarantees. One of the things we're looking at literally right now with David and others was today we've recently fixed, you know, around 2, 3 months, 4 months ago, we fixed it so if the server goes down, we try to reconnect proactively to that share, but we also need to reopen all of the persistent handles immediately. So we need to improve this HA support, and we're very close on that. Encrypted share support we talked about. Most of the core pieces are in there. It's over half done. We need to finish this last bit. And I'm hoping, you know, with these two test events back to back, this will give us a chance to do that. ACLs we have for SIFs. So finishing the XAdder that allows you to view ACLs with SMB3 would be useful. I also want to have a way of viewing auditing information, quota information, and claims-based ACLs through pseudo XAdders, at least for backup, if nothing else. And that's something, you know, if you guys have ideas on the naming for that. Bug status. We've got about 50 bugs opened in Samba Bugzilla. The 50 bugs that are active in Samba Bugzilla, there's a few that look serious. Most are not. Most is cleanup work we need to do to get it down. And there's a smaller number opened in the kernel Bugzilla. Some of these are stale, and they need some love to close them off. Now, what's the high-level view? SMB3 support is great for large file I/O, but it's not fast for metadata operations. If you're going to do a directory lookup with 10,000 files, it's going to be pretty slow because we're going to do too many open query closes, getting metadata over and over again for individual files. We need to support directory leases. That would help a lot. And we also need to add, and so this is something we talked about at the File System Summit, we have this witness protocol prototype in Samba. The client part of it is all we need. We need a witness protocol client that can ioctl down into the SIFS kernel, just wait on a witness protocol event so we know when to fail over. Like if we want to move a share from here to here because you're doing some management activity or some load balancing, that doesn't require the whole witness protocol implementation that's kind of stalled a little bit in Samba. I think they may talk about it a little more tomorrow. But the client piece, I'm hoping we can get linked in because only the client piece ioctling down into our kernel code is needed to notify the kernel as share movements requested. POSIX emulation, we emulate, right? This is not, we don't have POSIX extensions. We're going to talk about that tomorrow, or sorry, Wednesday with Jeremy. So Jeremy's talked, listen to that, about POSIX emulation. Today, though, POSIX protocol extensions. Right now, we're doing emulation. We'll talk about that a little bit at the end, though. And dialects. We support SIFS, of course, but I really want people to be using SMB2.1 or later. There's no reason not to be using SMB2.1 or later, except for the POSIX things we talked about, and we'll get to that later on. So there's a set of capability bits that are negotiated. Which capability bits do we know about and we support? DFS, leasing, large MTU, sort of persistent handles. Yes, we negotiate them. Yes, we reconnect them, but we don't reconnect them fast. So we don't reconnect them immediately on when the server comes back up, and we're fixing that right now. And of course, the server support is an interesting story for persistent handles. This is very important to provide guarantees on data integrity. CAP encryption we talked about earlier, it's in progress, not complete. Directory leasing we really need to do. That metadata performance is bad for the SIFS client compared, SIFS.KO compared with the Windows client. That 30% performance boost you get from being able to cache metadata information longer on a directory for which you have a lease, it's a big deal. And multi-channel, it's started, but it's not finished. It is a priority. One of the things that is holding us up is, you know, getting the Mellanox guys, getting the guys from these adapter vendors to help us with, you know, how do you simulate this on your little VM a little bit easier? Multi-channel and RDMA, being able to get the kernel, you know, looking at the NFS code and how that works and figuring out how to simulate some of these multi-adapter cases, especially with RDMA, would help. Because I think there is significant value in that. Copy offload, I'm very excited about that. It's a huge performance win. You can see here an example of, you know, here we have a 30 meg file. Now, the normal copy versus the with the server-side copy, without the server-side copy. You know, half a second down to 118 milliseconds, right? Big performance win. So, I mean, this performance gain is really neat. So, seeing the server-side copy of 3 meg file seeing a server-side copy of 30 meg file, huge performance win. Notice that you're using dash dash reflink. The default behavior of reflink now calls the ioctl for duplicate extents. And I know it gets a little confusing because there's at least four ways to do copy offload with SMB. Duplicate extents is the newer one for Windows 2016 REFS. Here's a wire trace of it, and you can get an example, you can get a feel for what actually goes on. I'm going to copy a 30 meg file, and you'd normally see at least 30 writes of 1 megabyte, right? Do we see any writes? You see an open, get info, an ioctl, a set info, an ioctl, and close. This is really fast. It's a heck of a lot better than sending 30 or 300 or 3,000 writes.
So what happens if the copy file fails on the server?
This is interesting. So what happens if copy file fails on the server? It's a great question. Now, I haven't looked at this in the last... These slides are actually from... This particular slide is actually from a couple months ago. CP, the CP command... Its error handling, I didn't think was that good for the reflink case. If you used the same ioctl yourself, you can do cleanup. But my impression was with the CP command, what you'd see is a 0 byte file left around, if I remember correctly. And you're welcome to try it. Just try some CP dash dash reflink. I don't think it's unique to SIFS. But if the reflink ioctl failed, I think you would leave a debris around a file, an empty file, a 0 byte file.
Fell back to just regular rewrite IO. So you can provide reflink with always and reflink with.
It was an option. Yes. I thought the default was it left a file around. That's a good point. So he thought there was options on the CP dash dash reflink. There probably are. And also, to be fair, behind this system here. This is Ubuntu that I was testing around with today. This is not the latest Ubuntu. It doesn't have the latest CP command. So I have to be a little bit careful because we in Samba and we in the kernel tend to write to the latest version of the code, but we don't tend to download the CP command that's the latest version of CP. So this is the problem we have sometimes, right? Is that we're really good about bringing the kernel in, we're really good about bringing Samba in, we're really good about running the latest Windows 2016. We're not really good about updating our two-year-old Ubuntu to bring in the latest CP command by reinstalling. I've been getting bugged every other day about, do you want to upgrade? So, but I think this is an important thing for you guys to try, and I think that it would be very useful to check on that. What is the error handling that goes on, and what is the error handling? Does it match our expectations for error handling? This is somewhat outside the scope of an ioctl, right? The ioctl either works or fails. So these are tool questions, really.
So in case of ioctl fails with some CP error, so the client should fall back to the regular standard copy.
The tool may or may not, and like David, I think that it's important to realize that whether you want to retry or fallback is part of the CP semantics, I believe, right? The CP command itself has those options.
Yeah. Let's say for ioctl is completely failed.
You should allow an option in your tool to do the boring way, the slow way. But realize that could be 1,000 times slower. So there may be times if it fails, you don't want to take up all that bandwidth. So I understand that there should be options, and I do understand that users of this tool could be very narrow applications that aren't using CP. They could be writing their own calls to this ioctl. And remember, this is not particularly SIFS-specific, right, or SMB3-specific, because ButterFS and other file systems support this. Now you'll also see NFS. I think Christoph also did it for XFS, right? Do you remember which file systems support XFS, NFS, ButterFS, and then SIFS?
OCFS 2 as well.
And he thought OCFS 2 as well. There may be others, but it's kind of neat. Okay, so let's look at it versus copy chunk. Now, copy chunk is what we're used to. Copy chunk is more common, especially to NTFS. The problem is we don't have a lot of tools for this. We really need to write some more SIF Samba-like tools for this. But I think you wrote Cloner, right? So Cloner allows you to do copy chunk. Here we're doing a 500 meg file. And you can see how long it takes to do the copy, this 500 meg file. Not bad. And we tried it a few times. And notice the performance can kind of vary dramatically, because here we actually had to do some write-through. Well, the second time was slower because, you know, you had an existing file you're writing over. So it slowed down a lot. But look at reflink comparatively. You know, what are we talking about there? 6,000 times faster, is that right? I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, there's a big difference between the performance we got for copy chunk and the performance we got for reflink. It's kind of neat. Now, remember, this is RAFS, so your times for NTFS, those, in, you know, copy chunk times were kind of interesting to look at. We don't have the luxury of duplicate extents for this, but it's kind of interesting because you don't get as much variation in NTFS as we saw with RAFS when the file existed or didn't exist, right? So RAFS, you got a big penalty if the file already existed because you're having to clean up what was there. Anyway, I find this very interesting. What's the best way to copy a file? We have lots of choices. Unfortunately, we only implement two of the four choices, but you know, in SIFs, but you know, it's a fun question. What's the best way to copy lots of data across the network? These aren't bad ways to do it, but there are other options. Now, Samba doesn't support all these options, but you know, across different servers, we have these four different options to do this. Okay, so what about HA? We have the new mount options. We can mount with resilient handles or mount with persistent handles. We probably don't care about resilient. If this mount option is specified, we're always going to try it, but I don't know what to do if it fails. I don't think we want to give up on a file if you refuse to give me a resilient handle. The server, for some reason, like Azure, you know, wants to give you a persistent handle, great. If for some reason it said no, I'll keep going, but I'm not gonna, you know, it's not a persistent handle, but I'm gonna try. I'm gonna try on opening to get a persistent handle, I'm gonna send that context. I do need to add the channel sequence number. This isn't quite as important without multi-channel, but it is something. Also, there's a couple failover things that are easy. And I know guys have played around in Samba with exotic ways of doing DFS as load balancing. DFS is kind of neat. But one thing that would be relatively easy to do that I think we underestimate and should have finished a while ago was, you know, if a server gives us multiple DFS referrals for the same path and one of the servers goes down, well, why not reconnect to the other? And also this witness protocol we talked about earlier. If I want to move from your server to your server because you're taking your server offline, I need to be able to be notified about that event. The client will have no problem reconnecting, but we need notification. And writing the witness protocol parsing, the RPC parsing for that isn't worth it. It's already there. We have a prototype for it in Samba. And so one of the things we talked about at the file system summit was just, you know, separating out that client daemon, getting that checked into the Samba tree, so part of the Samba client tools can just ioctl down into the kernel and wait on those events.
Hey, Steve.
Yes.
Question on the previous one. Those mount options, so those are opt-in. By default, you will not request either resilient or persistent?
We will. We'll always request persistent. So the use
the mount option is my question.
Yeah. So use persistent. The flag we keep on the share. So every share we mount, we will first mark it as use persistent. If this mount option were set, we'll try. And second, we'll set it if the server said continuous availability. So if the server said continuous availability, like Azure, right?
Right. It's a server cap.
I understand. So what I'm saying is if the user said you must, and by the way, if the server says it doesn't support it,
you'll request persistent handles unconditionally.
No, because if there's no cap, there's no point in requesting it. But if it's not continuous availability, and the server says it would support. So if you tell me that it's possible for you to support persistent handles,
right,
but you don't mark the share continuous availability,
okay,
then...
All right. Well, it sounds like a really weird option. It seems like it's going to be very difficult to tell the administrator how to use it.
Well, the short answer is you don't have to, because if you mark the share as continuous availability, we're implicitly setting this.
Okay.
So if it's continuous availability, we're doing it.
Well, it just seems like it's a lot of options for...
Well, realistically, what happens is your server either wants it for the share or it doesn't. So your server's going to say...
Offers it for the share. Whether the handle's persistent or not is the client's decision. And it's usually driven by the type of application.
Well,
persistent handles are really useful for virtual disks, for instance.
But I agree with you.
The handle, you can reconnect and recover without damaging the disk.
I absolutely agree with you. So his point, I think, is persistent handles are very valuable for specific applications. So, for argument's sake, let's say that you have an application, virtualization application, that wants persistent handles, and the rest of your traffic doesn't care.
Right.
You have two choices. You can either force the whole share to get it by setting continuous availability, and then the client will always try, or you mount it twice.
You're trying to get the efficiency of non-persistent handles.
Right.
For apps that don't care.
Yeah.
But you force it on.
Yeah. The lesson we want to learn here, I think, is the lesson of resilient handles. Having the app requested on open, nobody would do it.
Right.
So rather than have the app ask for it on open, if the admin wants apps to get the higher availability, they'll mount it twice, once with continuous availability, once without, to different directories. Right?
Okay. So that's an option. Yes.
Yeah.
What does the protocol say? That is, if the CA is not set, can you deliver persistent handles from a share for which CA continuous availability is not set?
I think so. I mean, this is a good question. This is a good question for Tom.
You know, the protocol says what happens when it's operating as designed. I think, you know, requesting a persistent handle from a server that didn't tell you it supported it, it's not illegal.
No, the other way around.
Simply ignore the context.
I think it's the other way around. So the question...
If CA is not set, but the server returns a persistent handle to you, is that okay? Right.
Well,
is that what you asked?
Yes.
Well, it can't, because the crate context, you wouldn't look for the crate context.
The server can't, you would have to insert a crate context in the reply, isn't there?
So basically, the interesting question is here, from a protocol perspective, when should the client request a persistent handle, and when shouldn't it?
When he cares.
Yeah, and since we don't have a per app way in POSIX for an app to say, give me persistent handles, what we do it is, okay, if your app wants it, okay, use this mount. If your app doesn't want it, use this mount. Or you have your server tell you, you must use it. Go ahead.
But the thing is that if the share is CA, you are always using the handle.
We'll always ask for them. So if the share is CA...
You will always get them, but...
Although you could open a non-persistent handle on a CA share. It would be weird, but...
Yeah, I mean, we...
A down-level client will do that, for instance, one that didn't support persistent handles.
Right. But the point is that on a continuous availability share, if we've negotiated a high enough dialect, we will try on the Linux SIFS client, because the server told us it's continuous available, we'll try to get a persistent handle. If we don't get it and the server wouldn't give it to us, okay, well, we tried.
The thing is that this application doesn't need it. There's no way to disable it. And you said you would mount it twice.
Yeah.
Would get persistent handles on both.
That's actually an interesting point. So what happens if the client absolutely didn't want persistent handles, but the server had continuous availability? So Azure, for example, right? You return persistent handles, right?
Yes.
So.
But only if you give us a normal B2 crate context, so persistent flag. If you don't.
Right.
We would give you persistent if you didn't ask for it.
Yeah, but you always say that you support persistent, and you always say I'm continuous availability.
Yes.
The share. So we had been using the continuous availability flag as a way of saying, this share has stuff that matters. Trust me, I'm the server. This share matters. There's something important here. Now, the capability I support...
It's not the share. It's what the application wants. The files on the share are no different whether they're persistent handled or not. It's the recovery scenario that changes. So it's
yes.
all the application, the thing that wants to open it.
Yes, but your Windows client will open persistent
yeah.
if it says continuous
That's
availability.
That's the behavior of the Windows client.
Yes.
That's one example.
Yeah. And so will we in Linux.
Well, okay.
Right, and the Windows client will open, if it says continuous availability, they'll open persistent, the Windows client will, so will our client.
Okay.
But the point is, I think it's an interesting point that you bring up, that if the application really didn't want that penalty, performance penalty, maybe we should mount no persistent, and you know, I don't care what the server supports. I mean, as an alternative today, you just mount with a dialect that didn't support it, but...
Is there any operational performance penalty? It's just a creative that you get.
I think what you're saying, like the latter part of it makes sense to me because the continuous availability capability comes at negotiate time before the server knows that you're connecting to a continuous available share or a normal share. So that's always going to be there. And then when you come into the share, that's when you can find out if the share is capable of persistent payments. So at that point, he has to choose the default behavior just like Weeva says. If an application is running against a CA share, it'll default to persistent. If it's against a non-CA share, it'll default to non-persistent. Now, the only case that's special, in my mind, is the case where you have an app that wants to run against a CA share, but doesn't want the overhead because he's going to do a lot of metadata operations and he doesn't want the retry to be persistent. So I think the idea of a no-persistent mount makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
The idea of having a persistent mount where you're going to attempt persistent handles against a share that's explicitly told you it doesn't do CA, which it sounds like maybe you might want to do the options, that sounds a little bit weird to me because the server is saying the share doesn't have the capability and I'm not sure what it means to try to use it. Like, I don't think the server capability was intended, at least maybe it's not our fault, to override the share capability. But yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, basically this both the server hint, this share matters, and the client hint, I don't care. I don't care. I want better performance, are important. And I think that the no option versus the yes option, now realistically, it probably doesn't make as much of a performance hit as we think, because once again, from the Linux perspective, a lot of our problem is metadata performance and things like this. It's not really, you know, reconnect delays and I'm not as worried about that, but I think that this is something we should revisit and maybe something we can talk about next week at the Microsoft event or the test event this week. Okay, so fallocate. This is actually kind of interesting. There's been a lot of changes a year to 2 years ago, different fallocate options. We support the basic stuff, or punch hole, zero range, keep size, and we discussed ways a little over a year ago on REFS at least. Now that we support block ref counting, we could simulate a collapse range and insert range. These are kind of interesting options. In Linux, you have the ability to take a file, remove a chunk out of the middle of the file, and push the two pieces together. So it's kind of neat thing. And then insert range, same idea. You got a file, you want to insert something in the middle of the file, keep the first half and the second half, but move them and stick something in the middle. So with the block ref counting stuff, it actually isn't that risky to do something like that by just sort of iterating through block ref counting, block copies to do that. Because you can use the hint that the file system supports block ref counting to know whether it's safe to do this. Okay, ACLs. Go ahead.
Does SIG support seek data, seek hole?
Seek data, seek hole. Seek hole.
So I think that would have to be mapped to like the query allocated extents.
Yeah, that's interesting. So the question is, do we support seek data, seek hole? I haven't looked at this in over a year. But that's, yeah, this is interesting. But the query allocated ranges thing you're talking about, right? So we'd have to...
I think it would have to be mapped.
Yeah, query allocated ranges. So the seek hole thing, let's look at that. That's useful to... So seek hole probably would require that we add support for querying the allocated ranges in a file. Okay, so ACLs. We have SIF support for ACLs. They're really important. There are cases where the mode bits can be emulated from this. I was kind of intrigued that Apple, I think, if I remember correctly, they query the default permissions back so they can return kind of simulated mode on the file by figuring out whether the particular user they've got has access by querying the by using a create context. But ACLs are a nice way to simulate mode, but they're also useful in other ways, right? Being able to return the ACLs and set the ACLs is useful for backup, it's useful for other things, and especially if rich ACL support makes it into the kernel. The reason SMB3 support isn't there isn't an architectural problem, it's just the SIPS code's been around a long time and the SMB3 code was somewhat different in its implementation. We need to finish up. Security features. We talked about secure negotiate. It's partially implemented, and the share encryption. Earlier, I had mentioned some very recent work. Here was the prototype of it that we were testing yesterday. We're returning the creation time on various files. So here's a set of files. You're going to see the this one has the archive bit set. This has archive and index. This has archive and read only. But these files were created slightly different times. You'll notice that they're the timestamps differ, while they're all created the same day, the same hour. But wrapping these in tools so it's actually human readable would be interesting, but this is just the raw blob. And then, what about metadata? Here you have the Windows view of a file. Hey, it's content indexed, archive bit set, read only on this one, system hidden. And here's the flag set here. You can see the flag, each of the flags set on the using the user DOS attrib. Once again, this could be used for backup. It could be used for, if we allow a set. I don't know if you guys have opinions on whether we should allow a set of this, but it would allow you to do, there's certain things like sparse, we set other ways, and there's certain things like compressed, we set other ways. But other than sparse and compressed, there is value to these flags to know them. We need to build some Python tools or little Samba-like client tools around those. Okay, we talked about XFAT. Generally, at the file system summit, I got the impression that XFAT integration was generally agreed on, as long as we didn't bike shed and keep adding new features to it. But returning at least the birth time and the some of the attributes in a more standardized format is important. We also, even if we don't want to be encouraging people to use alternate data streams, alternate data streams matter. You can open alternate data streams today. If you open file colon stream one, you open it, and just a file name, right? The problem is that you don't know that file has stream one and stream two and stream three. So how do you list that file has stream one, stream two, and stream three? If you knew that it had those streams, you could open them, and you could query information on those, but you can't because you don't know a way to list the streams. Once again, an XAdder to list the streams was what we were working on literally as I was walking up to this talk. We talked about the clustering and witness protocol integration. We talked about the DFS reconnect. Now, performance. There are some really cool things that could be done for performance. So what are some of the, there are probably more I'm sure half of you guys have other ideas on things that help with performance, but from my view, these are some of the more interesting performance features for SMB to talk about. Compounding. Do we do compounding? No. Does the Mac do compounding? Absolutely. Mac does way too much compounding sometimes, right?
It takes advantage of that feature really.
Yeah. So, I have this, most operations in SMB3 go through one routine called open query close. Well, that could be a pretty obvious compounding candidate, couldn't it? Right now, open query close calls open query and close, but we could just compound that. It was done intentionally, but we didn't finish the last bit. That would probably help 10 or 20% at least on metadata performance. Large file IO, we do pretty well there. Our performance can be better than NFS in some cases. It's really neat. Performance scales really well for large file IO. File leases, yep. Support leases, can we upgrade them? No. Lease upgrades might be nice to reacquire leases from time to time after we lose them. We don't do that. Directory leases, huge performance win, shouldn't be too bad. We don't support it. Copy offload, yes, we support the two probably most important mechanisms, but it would be nice to support the T10 style as well. Multi-channel, we do the basics, we query, we know the server has multi-channel, we know information about these adapters, but we don't take advantage of multi-channel. And this is unfortunate because Samba has recently added support for multi-channel. And of course RDMA, one of the challenges of RDMA is getting some good sample code in the kernel and some sample drivers that we can emulate RDMA when we're running around in presentations without RDMA in our VMs. And then, Linux-specific protocol optimizations. I think we should be very aware that every operating system has particular quirks about I/O, and being able to optimize that matters. And I think that we've spent a lot of time at these conferences listening to this. Say to Hyper-V. Hyper-V has particular I/O requirements. Probably Azure and other things do too. We have to be very aware of, in Linux, what we can do to reduce number of frames sent on the wire. And hopefully, as we go beyond the things that Jeremy is talking about with the Unix extensions, we can do that. Okay. When we talk about Linux extensions or Unix extensions or POSIX extensions, we have to remember that Linux is not POSIX. Linux does a lot of things that aren't POSIX. It has lots of extra system calls, things that are Linux specific. But, they matter. So what do we do today? The best effort compatibility. We can handle all the reserved characters, mapping them just like the Mac does. We can support these Minchel French symlinks. We can emulate symlinks multiple ways. We recognize the multiple ways. We can get most of the information we need. What can't we do? We can't do advisory locks. We can't do case sensitivity and opening paths. And without some sort of SIPSACL thing, we can't really emulate the mode bits very well. Apple's approach to this is reasonable and might be worth looking at for returning some of the mode bits. But the Unix extensions allow you to do this a little bit cleaner. This is actually good enough to run the vast majority of apps and test cases, though. So we could query maximal access requests, create context, as we talked about, to get some of the mode bits. The case-sensitive volume, unfortunately, isn't, the servers lie about this. The servers say they're a case-sensitive volume, and they lie, okay? So there's not a whole lot we can do about that. To use it as a clue, hey, the server says it's case-sensitive, let's not worry about case-sensitive mapping. Well, unfortunately, we can't. We have the NFS symlink code in Microsoft NTFS allows you to create a reparse point that their NFS server uses, and we could use these same things. They're nice. Only the clients follow them. They don't have any server security problems as a server follow junction might. We recognize it, but we could clean that up a little bit. Right now, the Minchel French ones have a sort of magic file size and signature in them that allow you to recognize them as a symlink, and Apple does that, and our Linux client does that. Query FS info, the physical bytes per sector, we could map that to an obscure set FS field. But it doesn't address byte range locking, it doesn't address the case-sensitive path names, and of course, we have this problem with streams. There are some things like you download a file with Internet Explorer, it's going to add a stream name for its zone. If I have file colon stream, how do I tell that from a valid POSIX path that has a colon in the valid POSIX path? So one of the problems we have is you're either mapping with POSIX emulation where colon is mapped to something else or not. And if you're not, then that would be a stream name. If you are, it's an illegal path to Windows, it's a legal path to POSIX. So how do we deal with that colon conflict between POSIX where it's a legal character and Windows where it's a separator between that and the stream name? Okay, second one. Apple has this create context, AAPL. And you can see some of the things here, and it would improve Mac interoperability. Here you see an example on the wire of what the AAPL context looks like. And nothing too magic about it. It's good enough for a lot of their needs. We could certainly do it. We can make it a mount option. Or we can go finish up the very relatively small changes that Jeremy and I have been talking about for these POSIX extensions. We'll have a breakout section on it as well as Jeremy's talk. Performance. We really need to do some of this compounding, get the direct releases in place. That should help a lot. There are cases where we're going to be faster than NFS, and there's cases where NFS, of course, is going to have fewer operations to get the same metadata back because their reader and their query info map a little bit better to POSIX. But the bottom line is we want SMB to be good enough for a lot of different workloads. Right now, it's good enough for a reasonable set of workloads. But to broaden that, we need this POSIX support. And we also need to improve the automated testing. XFS test is wonderful, but there are a subset of tests that fail. And some of those, we know why. Some of them need POSIX permission mode bits. Okay, we can deal with that. The FALLOC missing features that Dave and I were discussing, sure, there's a few of those. They're not that many. XFS test tests lots of file system specific features, things that other file systems don't support, things like FALLOCATE special features. we're going to fail at least one test, test 131, because we don't have advisory locking. Okay, I can live with that. And there's a few that relate to network file systems generally. Getting timestamp coherence between M time and A time and some of these consistent in a multi-node client server network, in some cases, is impossible. You can do it in a local file system, but in a network file system, it's not always possible. And there are a couple of cases like this that on NFS or SMU aren't going to fail, aren't going to work. But generally, XFS test works reasonably well on Linux, and especially with this the scratch mounts specified. And I think that as we clean up some of these last few things we've talked about here, getting to the point where 90% of the tests make sense on SIFS and pass is really going to change a lot, because it means that when you do a fix or when you're testing your server, you don't have to think as hard. When 60% pass, there's too much thinking involved. Is this a bug in my server? Is this a bug in the SIFS client? What's going on? But it's important to get a little bit farther along in the compatibility for POSIX, if for nothing else, when NetApp or when any other server vendor wants to do a quick test of their NFS client and SIFS client, you want to use the same tools. Being able to use the same tools against different protocol versions, SMB3, SMB3.1.1, NFS3, NFS4, using the same set of XFS tools, XFS test tools is helpful. And I realize XFS test sounds misleading because it has nothing to do with XFS anymore, but it's the name for the file system test suite. And you know, its history obviously leads it to that name because it came from the XFS development team initially, but it's now become a kind of a catch-all for all the test tools. But at these events, specifically at the PlugFest downstairs this week and then next week at Microsoft, we have the opportunity to make some progress here. And this is kind of exciting. You know, some of the SUSE developers and Citrix developers and others have been here working through some of these problems. I think, you know, SMB3 on Linux has a very bright future. I think it's really, I'm very excited about some of the improvements that were made in this quality of service and RSVD talks earlier. I'm kind of excited about getting additional security features in and just getting the performance a little bit better each year. And, you know, I think a lot of times on Linux we focus too much on local file systems and on maybe iSCSI and NFS. There is a role for SMB3 quite broad, and not just on Macs, not just on Windows. I think there's some workloads where it's really exciting on Linux as well. But I also want to encourage you guys to send patches, because you know we definitely need more help here, and you know this is a fantastic, you know, very very interesting challenge. Okay, we have time probably for only for a few questions. Anybody have questions? Yes, go ahead.
You mentioned earlier some of the Linux APIs like RidgeApple and XStep, and I was just kind of generically curious if you had much involvement in that or insight into how those things are going, more than just that they aren't in yet, because I know some of those, I remember the RidgeApple patches coming across mailing lists probably 6 or 7 years ago, maybe?
Well, I remember them because on my team at IBM years ago, we were working on that. I mean, this is like 2007 or 2008. So the RidgeApple patches have gotten gradual improvements. I think what I found encouraging was RidgeApple, some of the NFS work and XAdder work that was done was actually in preparation for RidgeApple and cleaning up. So some of the cleanup patches to make RidgeApple go in cleaner have gone in. I noticed this yesterday in annoyance because remember I was talking about the creation time and the DOS attributes. I was like, where did my code go? And I realized it went in because they took out some dead code. They took out some dead code because in preparation for RidgeApple they cleaned up some of the XAdder code. So there has been a little bit of the patch set go in, but realistically I think Jeremy Allison's had some offline discussions. You could find Jeremy and ask him you know, the progress he made. There's been strong objection to the idea of having deny aces in Linux because it does complicate the admin model. The patch set is just it's a typical Linux example. When you get a patch set that's this much complexity, it takes 10 times more than something with this much complexity. On the other hand, there are products shipping with RidgeApple support in it. It's, you know, the tree is available, and you know, we have you know, there's Samba modules to take advantage of it, and you know, NFS patches to take advantage of it. Go ahead.
There's more people than Microsoft to reject that.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. Is it more people than Christoph that object to RidgeApple? Probably, but he's the one that everybody hears about. I haven't run into anybody other than Christoph recently that objects to it.
He's here.
Yeah. He's here. I haven't asked.
Talk to him.
Yeah. And to be fair, Rich ACL is more complicated. XSAT, on the other hand, shouldn't be a big objection. And I think that got more general agreement at, I think we're much closer on XSTAT. On the other hand, the problem that was mentioned over and over again at the kernel, because we had this breakout session, we were talking about this, and Michael and I, no bike shedding. The kernel has this really horrible habit of trying to make it 2% better by adding 5% complexity, and then 100 of those changes, it just gets a little bit, and then it just falls apart. The whole XSTAT could return many things. If we leave it at what it is right now, it's not much objection. But why it's not in, because, we talked about it back in, April or May in Raleigh, is a good question. And it's something I haven't actually followed the mailing list discussions on to see where the last... you might be able to go out on LinuxFS Devel and see what the last reaction on XSTAT was, because that was much less controversial than Rich ACL.
I used to keep up with it, and I kind of fell behind.
And I feel a little bit guilty on the Rich ACL side, because on Rich ACL side, I could make the life easier by doing what the NFS guys did and kind of like making a sort of set of patches for SIFs that kind of look like the NFS ones, so when they turn on Rich ACL, it works for one more file system. Because one of the things that we have to be aware of is that if it provides more and more value to more and more file systems, that's good. But not every file system is enabled for Rich ACL. SIF supports it on the wire, so why don't we, just add the little bit of glue?
Why don't we just store it as an extended action versus the XSAT structure? And only those file systems which need it.
That's essentially what Samba does.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you do the Google space, so.
Yeah. So Samba stores other metadata as well in extended attributes. And it's fine. There's no harm in storing it. And the problem you get is that in multi-protocol access, it's a little bit more confusing. And it is a little bit more expensive to store it in, to have Samba stored in user space.
And it's not atomic.
Yes, and this is a big deal, actually. If you think about, it's actually not atomic either way, right? The Rich ACL interface wouldn't be atomic either, because one of the problems we have today...
Well, access checks, that's supposed to be...
Oh, the access checks are atomic, yes, but what I was... somewhat painful is I create a file in SMB3, I'm presented with create context. And when we have to go out to various XAdders to process create context, you could have an open succeed, but a create context relating to ACLs that we couldn't set.
We also have old temp file in Jenga.
Yeah, and then that's the way of...
So we could...
Yeah, yes. So you stick it in a temp file and then do the rename game. Yes.
But the other thing that I know we've been looking at with what I've been working on is actually exporting a local file system over NFSv4 and with the current Linux NFS server without the Rich ACL patches, it's completely faking the ACL support, and so it's not really properly compliant.
Yeah. And I think that what I think is important about your point about the faking ACL support when you have NFS ACLs on top of, there are other platforms obviously that support NFS ACLs a little more natively. When we, Rich ACL integration with NFS is, the patches are fine, but without that, there's a certain amount of complexity that is hard to understand when you're mapping twice, right? You're mapping on the client end and on the server end. So yes, you lose information, but more importantly, an administrator trying to be sane about denying access or allowing access, it's very hard to get right when you're mapping twice. And I think in this room, eventually all of us could figure that out, but we get it wrong a lot. And the chance for accidentally making data available, that's very painful. And this complexity, Rich ACL may be more complex, but it's not more complex than mapping twice. See, other questions? Okay, well, hopefully you guys can help out with patches and testing, but Once again, this test event downstairs is a great opportunity for us to talk more about optimizations and how to do this. And you know, let's get some more progress on this stuff. Yeah, thank you, guys. So this is the old Samba logo, right?
Yeah. Well,
yeah, we need a better Samba logo.
No, we have one. We have a better Samba logo, but it's the wrong one that...
Yeah, no, I put the wrong one because this is stolen from a year-old presentation. Mea culpa, my fault. Okay, thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening. If you have questions about the material presented in this podcast, be sure and join our developers mailing list by sending an email to developers-subscribe@snea.org. Here you can ask questions and discuss this topic further with your peers in the developer community. For additional information about the Storage Developer Conference, visit storagedeveloper.org.